Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Half Ashed. My name is Craig Schneider. That gentleman 1,850 miles southeast of me is none other than Mr. Kip Fisher. And we are coming to you live for the 190th time this 8th day of February, 2019. Ladies and gentlemen, we're glad you're here. And Mr. Fisher, how the heck are you?
I'm pretty good, I reckon. Better than I've been in a while. I can't complain.
Well, good. I don't know if that's a cry for help or you embracing your Yankee ways and not using any hillbilly language there. So either way, it's nice to have you.
What does that even mean? I don't have hillbilly language.
Life's good. Weather's good. Cigar's good.
Yeah, weather's fantastic. We got some rain past couple of days for the first time in ages. The country's been drying up pretty slowly again, so it seems comfortable. It's high about 80, low about 70. Not much variation. I can live with it.
Yeah, I'll take that. Holy hell. We, in I think a 48-hour span, we went from 29 below zero to 49 degrees.
And neither one of those is warm enough that I have any interest whatsoever in experiencing.
So it's damn near 80 degree difference. So yeah. If you think about that, if we went from 20 degrees, that would be too cold, to 100 degrees, that would be too hot. That was our span in 48 hours.
Yeah. Well, the one day I was texting you, our temperatures were most similar because it was earlier in the morning, but I was thinking by the afternoon, your house and my house are more than 100 degrees different.
That's just stupid.
Yeah, that's stupid.
Yeah, that's stupid.
But, you guys were getting down flirting around with where the plots of the two temperature scales cross.
40 below, yeah. We were within 10 degrees of that, darn near. That's as cold as I remember. Ay, ay, ay. That was not nice.
I'm not interested in that.
5 years ago was the last time Chicago had that snazzy-sounding polar vortex thing that the news media dubbed it. Mm-hmm. And I was building a house at that point, and we had a foundation in the ground. Stop me if I've shared this story before. We had a foundation in the ground for a massive house, probably a 6,000 square foot foundation.
Holy cow.
Half a basketball court was in that foundation. 11 foot pour, something like that. 10 or 11 foot pour. Big, big basement. We had tarping off the basketball court so the rest of the basement could be heated. And I had 340,000 BTU furnaces in that other, I don't know, 3,800 square foot section of basement when it was that 20 below 5 years ago. And I could not get that section of basement above 20 degrees.
Good grief.
20 degrees above zero. It was so cold, we would try to bend conduit. We were in rough mechanicals. We would try to bend conduit. We would crack conduit when we were bending it.
See, that should tell you, you should not be outside doing that kind of stuff.
You should not be outside doing that kind of stuff. No, it was bad. It was real bad.
Yeah, I don't mind that kind of weather through a window, in a book, in a conversation.
Yeah, we had a lot of that, actually. We had a weekend day just before it got super cold. It was cold. It was zero, roughly. And we ended up getting, I don't know, 6-8 inches of snow. We had a day when the whole Schneider household just kind of stayed inside and put a fire on and played some games and put a blanket down on the floor and everybody cuddled up and we had a bunch of tea. It was actually kind of nice. You don't do that often enough.
Our house in Florida had a fireplace, which sounds ludicrous because it's ludicrous. But I used to like having a fire burning, and I would open the doors and windows so I could light a fire in the wintertime.
Unbelievable.
That was too cold.
And what?
And that was still too cold.
I gotta say, man, That's not the brightest thing I've ever heard you do. I want a fire. I'll open the windows in winter.
Well, think of the winter.
I totally understand. A cold day for you in summertime for a high is 40 degrees, right? I mean, that'd be real, real cold.
Summertime?
Did I say summer? I meant winter.
Yeah. No, I have no interest in 40 degrees. I don't like it. That's not even strong enough. No.
Well,
I don't like 40 degrees. I don't like 50 degrees. I'm not a big fan of 60 unless I'm dressed for it.
You get 60 degrees projected here in Chicago, and you have girls wearing booty shorts and tank tops and guys wearing like baggy jean shorts like it's the middle of summer. I mean, people just go crazy over those here. The first 55-degree day, it's like you could go swimming.
That's stupid.
You just get used to it. I mean, you get used to it being cold, and all of a sudden, that feels mighty nice.
Funny, when we moved to Florida, we thought it was crazy because in the wintertime, it would be 65 degrees, and all these people are walking around with, like, parkas on and stuff. And so we evolved into that, where we were wearing jackets when it's 65, 70 degrees. And then we came here, and I have not yet fully adjusted to this, I guess, even after going on 4 years, because in the mornings, it'll be 70 degrees, and I see these dudes walking around with toboggans on and big, giant jackets. Come on now. I don't like the cold, but that's just silly.
Boy, if that ain't the pot calling the kettle black, I don't know what is.
I don't break out the mucklucks when it's 70 degrees.
Mucklucks. Oh, listen, boy. That's a term I haven't heard since Les Stroud was on TV. Oh, well. Well, hey, man, we have one of our favorite shows to do.
We do. We have an unbanded MF-er.
We do have an unbanded MF-er.
I'm not being off color. That's what this is.
You are correct. This is an unbanded cigar from my cousin, whose initials are MF. And this being the second unbanded that we are reviewing from him, it's MF2. So yeah. It's another MF-er.
It is indeed. And this guy is a tiny little joker. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
I'll explain my arithmetic that I've put here in the notes. This little guy's 4 3/4 inches long. What was that?
People don't realize the complex higher mathematics involved in measuring a cigar until they watch you type out the dimensions.
See, the way I figure, I'm just inventing a new branch of mathematics.
Theoretical.
Cigaronomics? No. I've already invented cigaronomics. That was
cigaronometry. 2007.
Cigaronometry is even better. All right. This cigar, 4 3/4 by roughly 40, but I'm going to say that it has one of the most aggressive box presses that you're going to find ever on the market. The box press on this, if you're on the video, you can potentially see a little bit of an example of it as I hold it up to the mic. It is sharp, so much so that it's not so much of a press. It's more of a crease on all four corners down the length of the cigar.
Hey.
It's four horses.
If you want to actually determine what the ring would be, it's not difficult.
You take your measurements, add them up, and inverse... Sorry, go ahead.
Just measure the perimeter of its cross section and divide it by pi, and that's its diameter. And convert that to 64ths. Boosh.
Boosh?
Yeah.
Did I just hear a boosh?
You did hear a boosh.
Boosh. Well, there you go, folks. I have measured those perimeter dimensions, shall I say, at 34/64ths, 47/64ths. And Kip, if you want to be our resident trigonometrist, you're more than welcome to figure that out for us, or geometrist.
Cigarometrist.
Could you be a cigarometrist? Of course. Why am I getting away from that gold?
So that 34 and 47 are the dimensions of the sides? I didn't know what you were measuring for that.
They are rough dimensions of the sides when trying to, or when measuring it by using a, whatever, a cigar ring gauge. Okay. So the narrow part would fit through at a 34, which means it's 34/64ths across, and the other 47/64ths across. So you should be able to get what you need from that.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm going to estimate that this is a 40 ring. How about we just go there? 4 3/4 by 40, incredible box press, sharp, crisp corners, and a nearly true-to-life pigtail. This thing was a little bit thicker, wound around a few times, and just looked like if you were to draw a cartoon pig, how you would make that pigtail appear. So pretty interesting, nice, professional appearance on this. The wrapper looks like, if I'm gonna talk a little bit about how the cigar was made, I'm going to use the analogy that the wrapper looks like a cigar that was rolled with a completely soaking wet piece of wrapper tobacco. I don't know if you've ever seen any cigar manufacturers roll with what I'll call a wet method, but the wrapper leaf is soaking wet. I mean, it's literally like you have dunked it underwater wet, and it's rolled out. And so it is almost stretched to an incredible length while it's being rolled around the cigar. So that way, when it dries out, it is thinner. It has more of a delicate appearance. And it also tends to get a little bit of like almost a water stained hue to it. That's how this cigar looks. Deep, deep, rich, almost a reddish brown. I would say that this is definitely a Colorado shade, bordering on Colorado Maduro. Pretty even, and definitely some veins in there. And those veins look as if they're pretty smashed into the wrapper. They do not appear to have any elevation really from the wrapper, but you can totally tell that they're there.
Cool.
It's a nice looking cigar.
It is. It has that indentation talking about from the band. And mine has from the band, but it's you'd never make it out in the video. So it looks like it was pressed with the band on it, I'm assuming.
Yep, that would make some sense.
And these razor sharp edges led us to believe pre-show that this was very much like a cigar we've been familiar with in the past.
I would agree with that.
But we're withholding our guess until later.
Yeah, I think that's a viable reason, or a viable thing to do. One of the questions I will ask you, since you lit yours up just before me, or perhaps a little further into it, what are some of your first third tasting thoughts here, tasting notes? What are you getting out of this?
Okay. The very, very initial light had a little bit of a vegetal kind of flavor. I don't want to say harshness. It was kind of a crispness. That quickly dissipated. It's got some bacon spice kind of thing going on now, but it's not quite as sweet as I would typically put with that. Still maintains a little bit of acidity mixed in with it. So, digging it so far. It's not changing my life, but it's a good cigar so far.
I would add, I agree with that assessment. Although I don't think the vegetal flavor has gone away for me. It's now accompanied more by some other things. I would also add that initially on the light up, it was really toasty. Kind of a heavy, toasty, bready, like a burned toast or burned bread flavor right off of that. I don't think I really burned the crap out of the cigar. I was lighting off a cedar spill and trying not to bury in the flame, but that stuck out to me as being a little different from another typical cigar. Excuse me. I would also say that that balanced, and I had some hints of sweetness in like a dark dried fruit, some raisin, plum, excuse me, type sweetness, but those have gone away. I'm, oh, I don't know, half an inch in. Those were a little bit more towards the initial lighting. Maybe the first five puffs I had some of that. Now the sweetness is pretty absent. A little bit of that vegetal, almost tannic flavor without being too crisp. Yeah, there's definitely a little bit of toasty tobacco in there too, and some woodsy flavors. I'm not too good at naming the types of woods or the wood smoke that it smells like, but it's got something in there that reminds me a little bit of like a, I don't know, maybe just being packaged in cedar. It might just be heavy cedar aroma.
Yeah. And without further giving away any more details about our hunches, the things you just described with the toasty flavors and the woodsiness are kind of defining properties of the cigar we speculated about.
And just for full disclosure, I have very limited experience with that cigar, though I have much more experience with cigars perhaps made by the same manufacturer with some similar Vitola characteristics, but not blend. So I'm not anyone who's saying, oh, well, they're leading themselves to an answer there. I'm not familiar with the profile of this cigar. I am just familiar with the rollers, let's say, or the manufacturers, let's say.
Yeah, we're having a lot of speculation in the chat room, but nobody has hit on it yet.
Why am I not in the chat room today? I got to go to the chat room.
Also, there was a question early on. They asked if it was open or closed foot. It was an open foot, typical, normal, chopped foot. Nothing fancy about the foot. Did have the pigtail that Craig mentioned on it. Tightly spun little pigtail on top of the head. The kind of square press, kind of box press, square press, whatever kind of press that makes it stand out. It's almost unique in the industry to me.
I do completely agree with you on that. I definitely think that it's unique in the industry. All right, hold on one second. I am trying to get out of the chat so I don't get feedback while we're recording like I just did. Sorry for that.
I didn't even hear.
Oh, good. Well, then I'm lying.
Never happened. Can't prove it.
They can't prove a thing. All right. Huh. Well, it's a good cigar. It's a really good cigar, strength and body-wise for me. It seems pretty clean also.
Yeah, and I have to say, if this is what we initially thought it was, I've never had this size, but I've had many of the other sizes.
My cousin and I have gone back and forth somewhat recently about some cigars that he's smoking, and he's talking about being on a Petit Corona kick because one of his favorite shops brought in a bunch of different offerings from a manufacturer all in Petit Corona size. And so it made me think for a moment that it might be one of those, but no, it definitely wouldn't be. This is from a year ago, year and a half ago, 2 years ago when we got these. Not anything more recent. So,
yeah,
forgive that little rat hole.
Hmm. That's what we're here for.
Mm-hmm. It's what we're good at. You know, and I'm assuming we're pretty much moving past our introduction here. But, Kip, I got to say, there has been more cigar related news since our last show in as long as I can remember.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, there's been a few legislative items in particular that have come up. The ongoing onslaught of people bouncing amongst the various companies and that kind of stuff. But yeah, we do have a few items to talk about tonight that are, let's see.
Interesting.
Yeah, at least.
So apparently, stick around if you want to almost be bored. Is that what we're saying?
No, I'm mistaken. It's a lot of legislative things are happening. Yeah. All right, I'm gonna shut up.
I feel like I need a soundboard to make the wah wah. Okay, so please keep listening to our show when we talk about rum and cigars. Here we go. All right. The CRA's got some interesting new method for uninteresting new method for communicating with some politicians. I was a little intrigued by this, I have to admit.
Yeah, did you say uninteresting or an interesting?
An interesting.
Okay. I'll buy that, I guess. Yeah. They,
okay.
They sent this out in an email within the past couple of weeks in one of their email blasts. And just
isn't
an update.
That interesting?
Huh?
Never mind. That was a terrible joke. You said, yeah, they sent this out over email. And I said, I know. Isn't that interesting? Like, that was the. Oh, good. Just go on.
I'm going to have to edit that out. No, just the email was one of their typical email blasts and just an update on what they're doing and what's going on. And so this is not really a, well, let me just say what it is rather than what it's not. They have sent a letter to all of the sitting governors of the states within the U.S., which is a little bit different approach. You know, they often work on a federal level with legislators directly and specifically and through lobbyists, of course, through other lobbying groups. But they sent this letter to each of the governors, and it was tailored to specifically present to the governors some of the things that could impact them directly in their own states. This letter didn't share what many of us would call new information as cigar guys that are kind of keep tabs on the industry, but it does share some things with governors that they may not be aware of that could happen, potentially happen through the FDA regulation. And they use the letter to point out the potential job losses throughout the nation in different areas, especially in some states like Florida. That would be a big deal in Florida, of course, because there is a good deal of a good number of jobs in Florida tied to the cigar industry, but also points out losses in tax revenue and some of the other associated things that come into the state that would be meaningful to a governor. And what they have done with this in pointing out these issues to the governors is ask them directly, hey, use your influence to work with your legislators to get, you know, these things, some exemptions for premium cigars. And they detailed some of the differences that we've talked about many times between what we call premium hand rolled cigars versus cigarettes or other tobacco products that are different in some respects. And also were responsibly pointed out that, okay, we understand your concern and other legislators' concerns with underage smoking, but the premium cigar market is not really the thing that 15-year-olds are looking for. They're not looking to spend $10, $12, or $15 on a cigar. That's not our target. We don't want to attract underage smokers, and we're not a niche in the market that they're interested in. It's not something that is a significant portion of underage smoking. It's not premium cigars. So they presented a lot of the same information, but they did it to a different audience, and that's what was different about this letter, that they're working with or through governors to lend their influence rather than working directly at legislators who may be on the ground. And so they kind of added something to the arsenal, I think. I hope it's fruitful. I hope it kind of pans out. But when you point out to a governor how this impacts your state and what it looks like to lose 25,000 jobs or the revenue and income through various taxes or whatever, and that could drop for it, that's a little more meaningful to somebody like a governor who takes the heat when things happen within a state.
I completely agree. I mean, I don't mean to imply that I know what's best, but this conversation just seems as if it is logical. You know, our standpoint here has always been, how do I want to say this? There needs to be some sort of cohesion and unified front. And I think that just attacking the same thing over and over again isn't a good representation of that. Educating across the board is what we're truly trying to do and what we need to remember. And I think that having a conversation where we're just talking to everyone who's going to essentially have some sort of an impact here is absolutely valid. You know, a governor's responsibility is for the well-being of the state. And if we're not going to truly take that into account, or if we weren't truly taking that into account, it doesn't make enough sense to me. And this is really the first concerted effort to spread the word rather than just on the federal level, but more from an educational perspective. And I love the hell out of it. I think that it's just a bloody brilliant idea. I really, really like it.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was a good move. I hope it's effective. Of course, you know, I don't have my crystal ball handy. It's in the shop, so I don't know what the future is bringing, but I hope it's effective. I think it's a good approach and a good try either way.
Well, I'm excited to hear what their takeaway is from it. I don't necessarily think that there's going to be any immediate resolution or any sort of solution that's coming from this. But I also think that, you know what, this is a good next step. How about that?
Yeah. I mean, it's not like these governors are going to receive this later and say, oh, holy crap, how have I missed this for all these years, and start making phone calls tomorrow. But you're exactly right. It's educational, and it's a step in the right direction, I think.
I'm all over it.
You're on it like white on rice.
White on rice, boy.
Well, all right.
Why don't you get into our next item here?
Okie dokie. Yeah, this is not brand new news, but about 2 weeks ago, a press release came out through odd channels. It went through various trade magazines and email blasts and PR groups and whatever. And I didn't think a lot about it at the time, but Half Wheels published a story today that caught my eye just through the social media feeds. And to provide a little bit of a backdrop, a couple weeks ago, TMA, which is the Tobacco Merchants Association, who for some reason make it difficult to find what TMA stands for. I had to search for 50 anyway, I did find it. They completed an acquisition of Spectcom International, which many of you may not recognize. That is a parent organization, a parent company that owns a number of smaller than IPCPR trade shows. They own trade shows. They own quite a few magazines in various types of media outlets that are for the most part, associated with the tobacco industry, tobacco at large, not specifically or just cigars, but tobacco. Everything from seeds and farmers to the other end of the spectrum at retail. They, being TMA, has purchased Spectrum. Well, Spectrum owns some of the magazines that probably many of the folks within the sound of my voice are familiar with, like Cigars and Leisure, Pipes and Tobacco, Tobacco Magazine, just Tobacco, a number of those kind of things. And so they initially announced this release, and they said what they're doing, kind of, but it was a little bit vague and sounded like they're going to kind of roll these things up into some larger media thing. They're creating a new division in their corporation, and there's a quote: the TMA will create a tobacco and nicotine content experience for industry and all stakeholders that has more depth and coverage than anywhere else, and watch for new topical content coming soon. So kind of sounded like they're rolling many of these things up into some new thing, new way to access the media. And some of these magazines are just trade magazines that you all who hear me may not be familiar with. They're magazines that would come to shop owners or other industry folks, not necessarily the end consumer, but some of them are consumer magazines. But anyway, what caught my eye this afternoon, it was kind of peculiar that I saw this come through the social media feed that Halfwheel published an article about it, because I knew this had taken place weeks ago. It wasn't something that just happened today. So I opened it up, and they're reporting that they have sources, I guess, close at hand, who say they're actually shutting down those three magazines that I mentioned before. Only be publishing one more issue and then shut down. And I don't know if that means shut down, like done, or if it's just going to be they present the information in some other way, that it won't be a paper magazine, it'll be online, or there'll be a paywall and it won't be free. I don't know. I don't know what any of this means. It just was interesting to me because the press release sounded like as if they were aggregating these things into a united thing rather than kind of trimming the fat out. But I guess we'll see. As the days come on, they did say they had asked for but not received any kind of comment from TMA staff.
I got to tell you, this article is one that makes me kind of go, what? I feel as if I don't really get it all.
Okay.
You know, I mean, am I the only, am I alone in that?
No, I feel that way every single day.
Well, in that case, folks, it's been a great show. Thanks for tuning in. Neither Kip or I have anything more to share.
In what way? What do you mean specifically?
First of all, what was your familiarity with TMA before this?
With the magazines? I've read them. I belonged to IPCPR in the past. I haven't renewed since 2016, last time I went to the show. But I got their trade magazines. I have had Pipes and Tobacco in the past. I have read Cigars and Leisure, but never subscribed. But yeah, I'm familiar with the magazines.
Huh. Okay. I think your familiarity with them is different from my familiarity with them. I've never really perused them. So that's one thing. Two, it's odd to me. I don't quite get the consolidation. I don't know. It just doesn't. I understand the point. But I also don't think that the point is successful. There's a consolidation that probably is because there's not as much of a need to separate. But at the same time, well, actually, no, I won't get away from that. There's not as much of a need to separate, very much probably akin to what our pre-show conversation was in regard to. You know, you need to be you need to also have some aficionado to go with the cigar. I get it. But I just don't get what do I want to say? What do you think? What's the tone here in regard to just canceling a couple magazines and only putting one out?
I don't know. That's yet to be seen. But if I had to 100% throw something out there that's totally made up and speculative, it may be that the customer base for these magazines doesn't really justify publishing a paper edition. It may be that you consolidate them, and by doing that, you consolidate the customer base, and it makes a lot more sense if, rather than having three magazines with 10,000 subscribers apiece, you have one magazine with 30,000 subscribers, and it's more lucrative.
Don't you get the impression that that's not what this is saying?
Well, that's not what I understood from the Half Wheel thing. It sounded like they're just dropping them. I don't know. I don't know what their plan is yet until they provide some more information, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll await that information too. It just doesn't. Maybe I feel like there's more behind a door that they haven't announced to us yet, purposefully.
It does seem that way. And this company has more than two dozen magazines / media things. But of the three I mentioned, which are three that I'm a little bit familiar with, they have different target audiences. Pipes and Tobacco has a target audience. Cigars and Leisure has a target audience. Those are largely consumer or consumer kind of a little bit into the industry. Tobacco and Tobacconist are industry magazines that are, you know, they provide similar information, but they're actually targeted to people who have their livelihood in the industry. And I don't know if there's enough overlap between the audiences of these various things that they will have the same success in pulling everyone from all of those periodicals under one umbrella. I don't know. I mean, is somebody going to be interested in a single magazine that they get the information they wanted from Cigars and Leisure, but it also has a bunch of industry stuff? Do they really care about that? I don't know. It's going to have to wait until they publish something and see how it's received.
How about a side question of who out there gets their cigar information from a periodical? Do you think there's a lot of people that are there doing that? Or do you think that a lot of the typical consumers of paper media are people who like another form of entertainment that just doesn't happen to be digital?
Yeah, I think you're onto something there. I think a big part of the folks who read a magazine, a paper magazine about cigars, are doing it when they're sitting in a cigar shop because it's laying on the coffee table in front of them and there's nobody else in there smoking a cigar right now.
I've got one sitting on my coffee table upstairs. I still get Cigar Aficionado 5 years after my subscription lapsed, I think.
You know,
3 years, something like that.
Someone gave me a subscription to Cigar Aficionado as a Christmas gift one time, and I never ever re-upped that, but I got it for years and years and years.
Sorry, that was the Club Soda opening. Yeah, it was the same thing. It was a Christmas gift from my father-in-law, and I still get it. Well, it's on my coffee table upstairs in our family room, and I have it there merely because sometimes my wife is watching a TV show that I don't care about, and I like my wife more than I like my cigars, and so I don't come downstairs to get away from her. I stay up there and bring the cigars to me.
Yeah,
I don't read that magazine to get new information. I read that magazine to surround myself with something that I enjoy.
Right. It's still funny to me, though, how it's tough to get an accurate bearing on what we're talking about, because the majority of the information we collect would be through online means, which is going to be heavily focused around people who spend their time online to get their information. It's going to be skewed the results. Mm-hmm. So I do know that paper magazines still generate a lot of ad revenue, and they still have a lot of subscribers. But I don't know that that's where people are going to turn day to day to get their news. I think most guys that are really into the cigar industry and following it closely are going to look at Half Wheel, or they're going to look at Cigar Coop, or they're going to look at those things online because they're updated several times every single day.
Yeah.
And it's just quicker than waiting. What Cigar Aficionado is 4 times or 6 times a year now. It's not even a monthly magazine. It's more than quarterly, but not by much, I don't think. So, you know, you publish a story about a new cigar that's coming out that may not actually publish until weeks after it's on the shelves. I don't know how valuable that is to many people, but still a lot of people read in the magazine.
Well, we took a bit of a diversion there and just kind of got into generalized print media, but we talked earlier, it's amazing how much applicability this may have though. We talked earlier about how I'm not sure there's an audience to get into a deep dive on tobacco varietal difference and farmer, not manufacturer or brand owner, but farmer methods and interviews, you know, things that are really, truly deep dive into cigars. I don't think that's there. I don't think that there's any manufacturer who puts that out. Probably twofold. One, that's really freaking hard to do. When we started Half-Ashed, we had delusions of focusing on a different tobacco varietal and talking about it and discussing cigars that it had been released within. And that did not last long because, one, we're not experts, but two, and equally as important, not a lot of that information is out there to even try to source. Right. If you're not developing those relationships and being able to develop firsthand knowledge of it and share firsthand knowledge, it's damn near impossible to find.
Right. And a lot of the sources for that are now 70 years old. It's not, who knows? I mean, outside of the guy on the ground on the farm somewhere who is not publishing magazines or websites, that information lives and dies in people's minds and is passed on from one guy to the next. It's not, it's not readily available.
I had an absolute gasp when I was down in Nicaragua the last time, which I can't believe was now 9 years ago. I was on La Estrella and Pepin was there, and he was growing a tobacco that just had an absolutely awkward looking flower. It looked like it was almost sickly. But the leaves were beautiful and large and the plants were robust and there was nothing wrong with it except the flower. And so I talked to him a little bit about it, and it had come out that it was a varietal of tobacco from Cuba that was bred so that way the farmer could not steal seeds and grow their own tobacco without it coming from the Cuban government, and therefore the farmer having his own black market, so to speak. It's called Compero Uno, I believe. And he was shocked that I understood it, that I knew that something was up with it. And it almost seemed as if part of his surprise was that some white boy from the States knew about it, and part of his surprise was that somebody cared. And I think that there is something out there. I think that you could, you know, it's the field of dreams mantra. If you build it, they will come. If you really had solid tobacco information and shared it in a way that was easily digestible, you could knock it out of the park. But I don't see any major difference between Cigar Aficionado, Cigar Journal, as it's called now, Smoke Magazine, so on and so forth, all these others. So it's really, you can't quite say that there isn't a market for these individual niche things. I honestly think that the market hasn't adapted. It's still an 80-year-old market like it's 1940 or 1939. You know, it just still acts that way in certain ways. You know, it's like there's no written language here when it comes to tobacco. It's all passed down verbally from generation to generation.
Yeah. And to
what? Yep. I didn't know you were going to keep talking. I just was yapping for 5 minutes and you respond by going, yeah.
Yeah. It's like that guy you send a text to that's just long, spilling your guts or whatever, and he says, "Okay."
Okay.
Okay. I knew that guy. Drove me nuts. And part of what is tangled up in this that makes it more difficult in this industry is it seems like a resistance to going forward to online stuff. Yeah. Look at IPCPR for how many years they were so resistant to even having online media at the show, a trade show, which every other trade show on the planet just about had fully converted to online media in the past years. Now they've made some changes and it's not like it used to be. And I don't go to the show anymore, but still they're lagging behind by a decade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You caught that, huh?
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to probably the most controversial news item that we have to talk about this week.
Okie doke. We are about to talk about Hawaii, which has been historically a very progressive state in its tobacco legislation, in its controls and regulations and prohibitions and whatnot. They were the first state to raise the purchase age to 21. They've now been followed by several others, and they've been the first with various types of bans and whatnot. And so there are a couple of stories out of Hawaii since our last show. The first being the introduction of a bill, actually the reintroduction, because this bill has been proposed two or three times in the past. It's not new. But each time it gets a little more acceptance, I guess. So at some point, I suppose it'll become law. But it's been reintroduced that would prohibit internet or mail order sales of cigars and other tobacco products into the state. Now, granted, already it's illegal to sell cigarettes and smokeless tobacco, snuff, that kind of stuff through the mail. I remember cigarettes were already banned from internet sales for a long time. When the snuff, I've never been a dry snuff user, the snort kind of thing, but I always kept two little tins, a menthol and I can't remember what the other one was. Kept them around because when I have a cold, a little bit of that will clear your nose for about 15 minutes and you can breathe. But anyway, so I needed to order. It comes in like little, you know, 5 milligram tins, just tiny little things. And I went to order some and the law had changed several. It's been close to a decade ago, I guess now. But cigarettes and smokeless tobacco have long been illegal to sell through the mail, through the internet, through whatever. They need to be bought in person. So this bill, although it may not be presented as such, is specifically for tobacco, for cigars and OTP, other tobacco products, which would include pipe tobacco and that kind of thing, and would prohibit any Hawaiian citizens from ordering online or through mail order catalogs. It says or mail order, although I don't think there's a huge number of mail order catalog shopping going on these days.
What? You don't say.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe there's some out there somewhere. I don't know. But yeah, so that's the first thing. This I don't know that it's still yet the year that it's going to pass. I don't know that it has that kind of support yet, but if you keep reintroducing something long enough, eventually it'll it'll work its way into becoming something passable, or you just wear somebody down until they'll vote for it.
It's probably the latter.
Yeah. And what's the other more interesting story? This came from USA Today. I'll put links to these in the show notes. It came to me through USA Today. I have a Google News feed that I check out on my phone every day or so, and caught the story in USA Today. But it is actually has been published in a number of other outlets now as well. But they've reported that in Hawaii, State Representative Richard Cragen has proposed what, for all intents and purposes, amounts to a phased prohibition on cigarettes in their entirety, just about, at least on their purchase, which if you can't buy them, you can't smoke them. He is proposing to go from the current 21-year age limit on tobacco or on cigarette purchases to 30 years of age next year, 40 the following year, 50 in 2022, and 100 years old in 2024. You'll have to be to buy cigarettes if this were to go through. Now, this bill is a little different, kind of the opposite than the other one. This one actually exempts premium cigars and other tobacco products. It's specifically targeted at cigarettes. But, you know, if you go and raise the age, purchase age to 100 on something, that is effectively a ban. There's not enough of a 100-year-old market out there to justify a store even keeping cigarettes in stock, I don't guess. So it's not expected to become law, but it's one of those things. Again, if you keep reworking it, retooling it, rewriting it, and representing it at some point, it'll make its way through somewhere down the line. But it comes up in committee in the next week, I think, in the very near future. It'll be debated under committee and see if maybe it can be rearranged in some way that they believe would be digestible to the other legislators and taken to the next step. Now, the speculation from some other legislators, from other anti-tobacco experts, is that it's too abrupt right now. The way it's written right now, it doesn't have a chance. But they are thinking this is the first step toward what they call their end-game strategy for the professor they were talking to. It said it was time to discuss the end-game strategy for smoking to literally put smoking in the history books as a thing of the past, where it's not even a thing. And he says the reason he believes that is because smokers no longer have the voice they have in the past. There's just not enough of them left, that the numbers have dwindled far enough that they don't have the power anymore to influence legislators in the same way that they would in the past. And with Altria and other of the big guys kind of declaring they want to transition to something more like vaping or whatever, rather than cigarettes or other tobacco things, I don't know how much of a fight they're going to continue to put up, spending billions of dollars every year just to stay in the market. You know, at some point they're going to transition to whatever looks better from a business standpoint.
Well, Altria, I mean, didn't Altria spend something like $25 billion on Juul? I mean, it was just a gargantuan amount, $100 billion?
No, I think it was $13 billion.
13? Okay. It was a lot of money on a vape company.
Yeah, well, the vaping has gone to astronomical numbers just in the past 3 or 4 years. I think everyone saw early on it was going to be a big deal, that it was going to take hold, but I don't think anybody saw coming what has happened with vaping these past couple of years. It's insane.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, you can go just about anywhere in any of the suburban towns around here, and within a half mile, you will see another vape store. I mean, literally, it is 10 blocks. You're going to find another vape store.
Yeah, it's like the drugstore phenomena in Florida. When we first moved to Florida, there were Walgreens and CVS drugstores, pharmacies. And at that time, there were still Eckerd. Eckerd has since closed up shop throughout Florida. But anyway, so we started noticing that one of the two would build a new store. And they were constantly building, 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 building in the early 2000s. And every single time on the diagonal corner, the other would build a store. And it became that way with roll-your-own tobacco initially and then vaping. The roll-your-own guys were the ones responsible for the ridiculous pipe tobacco tax that came to be in Florida that I've talked about before, because they would set up a shop, they would buy several big cigarette machines where you could just dump tobacco in the top and it would start spitting out cigarettes. So you could go and buy finely cut, ribbon cut tobacco, roll your own tobacco, which at that time was labeled pipe tobacco to avoid taxes, and dump it in the machine and it would spit out a few hundred cigarettes, and you could do it without paying any taxes on those cigarettes. So they could do it cheaply. And so these shops started popping up, and it was just like you described. Every half mile, there'd be another shop. And that, as time has passed, has kind of transitioned to the vaping shops, what you're talking about now, where it's just that's all they do. They don't sell cigars. They don't sell cigarettes. They sell vape supplies. I guess it's kind of a tinkerer's thing. A lot of people like to build their own and finagle around with them to accomplish whatever it is they want to accomplish. I'm not especially well versed in the vaping world.
Well, last topic of that conversation aside, I have some opinions about this Hawaiian legislation. Excuse me. Three items. One, I feel like we have said for many, many years, we, the cigar media collective, if this is such a terrible thing and you're trying to protect the kids, ban it. Don't sell it. But if you really care, why are you still selling this and just trying to tax us or just trying to we're just going to make it for older people, or we're just going to make it so you can smoke it in your car or smoke it at your house. You can't smoke it in public anymore, though. They still want the revenue. This is the first bit of legislation that can say it's for health and doesn't seem to do much that contradicts that within its own doctrine. That's item one. I want to call that out and be honest and say that I have personally made some of those statements, and it's nice to see that this is actually what's being discussed. It doesn't seem as if there's a lot of politicking in some of the summaries that I have found on this. I like that. I appreciate the honesty, and I'm more likely to view this through an untinted lens. That's item one. Item two, I don't really know how big of a problem I have with this. And I know that that is not going to be a popular opinion, but you know what? It's a state's right. It's like a business saying, no, I don't want to allow smoking here, or I want to allow smoking here. I'll just go somewhere else. Now, I understand that that is short-sighted, and that if you look at precedent set over the last 10 years, when Hawaii raised its age, all of a sudden, so did California and Oregon and Washington, and boom, that whole west coast of the United States, 21, you cannot buy tobacco. This sets a precedent for not being the first person to have to break that ice or broach that topic. It's scary, but I also don't want to be a stick in the mud here and say that I think that cigarettes are anything but a detriment to public health. An adult should be able to choose what they want. The good libertarian in me says, if you want to kill yourself with something ridiculous, kill yourself with something ridiculous. Don't impact your neighbor. The fact of the matter is I think that you could probably make a case akin to roads or infrastructure maintenance or things like things that are typically thought of as being a governmental responsibility, and be objective and say, boy, you could probably make a case that people aren't going to stop this thing that they're addicted to. It's going to take the government to stand in. That's point number two. Point number three, the converse to that, is how well did prohibition work? You know, now we're in a completely connected, interconnected world. You can be in Sydney, Australia in the morning, and by the next day, you're in Paris, France. You know, two polar opposites, hemispheres, vertical hemispheres, horizontal hemispheres, languages, climates, everything. We are so connected. It's just ridiculous.
You can be there by the end of the day, but you can communicate there right now.
Even better point. Absolutely. So why is it that we think that making something illegal would stop it? I don't think that it will. The difference here between cigarettes and alcohol prohibition is that I don't know of many people who are consumers of cigarettes for the joy of consuming cigarettes. Most people consume cigarettes as a drug delivery device. Most people consume alcohol because of the joy of socially drinking, how they feel when they've had a drink, and even to the point, the taste of having that drink. I'm not right now. I'm having club soda right now, but I had a glass of rum earlier. I'm not the slightest bit drunk or tipsy or whatever terms you want to use. I didn't consume that rum for that reason. I consumed that rum because it was enjoyable. I don't think your average cigarette smoker is consuming that cigarette or consumed their first cigarette in the hope that it would be an enjoyable experience. I think that they consumed it for whatever reason it was that they tried for the first time, that it likely was not because they wanted the consumption just as you would want food or water, and then it turned into something that they became dependent on. So I think that this is different from prohibition, though you can certainly use the precedent of prohibition in that this won't stop anything. I think this is still a long-term argument on how it could ultimately kill that industry. And finally, I'm not naive enough to think that this wouldn't eventually have some applicability to cigars or pipe tobacco. It has in every other tobacco legislation that you're going to find on the books. It's not like you can't smoke cigarettes in Illinois, but you can smoke pipe tobacco or cigars at your local bar. It's tobacco consumption, combustible tobacco consumption. It's writing on the wall, but I can't in good conscience stand completely in opposition to this, because there is something here that I think is for the best of us, and that is the royal us. I just need to figure out what's more important to me. And it's a really interesting conversation to have amongst yourself.
Frank in the chat room says he didn't know about what you're talking about, that have you ever seen smokers that light up outside the airport after a long flight? It looks orgasmic.
It does. I get it. I don't know. It's just funny. You know, Dan Crouch has got a statement in the chat room. If banning something works, let's ban crime. Ha ha. Very funny. I'd like to see you go to your local corner store and buy a 6-pack of murder. It doesn't quite work that way.
It depends on where you live.
Hey man, I just spent the last 2 days in the heart of the good old west side of Chicago, so I am familiar, or more familiar. Anyways, those are my opinions. I welcome honest to goodness true conversation, especially if it's in opposition to my thoughts. I would welcome the opportunity to educate myself, from someone who is more educated than I and able and willing to have a conversation, not just shout digitally at me. So send me an email.
If you shout digitally, is that just with one finger?
I used to go to a restaurant that had a cigar bar in the basement that was owned by a proctologist. A urologist. And he was a nice guy. We would have cigars with him every once in a while, and he would talk about things. And so he talked about how, you know, he needed to start advertising that, you know, at whatever 40, you needed to come in for a checkup, and that he was offering digital exams. And he was just kind of joking about the fact that he's like, yeah, I've been thinking of saying, you know, we're offering this new state-of-the-art digital exam to see what people, if that actually does anything, if it makes people more likely to be willing to get that test at 40. And that always stuck out with me. It was the first time I had heard it referred to as a digital exam.
You know, just being on the topic of the bands makes me think of my wife. She, to this day, harbors a large amount of anger and bile over the trans fat ban in New York City because Oreo cookies decided to change their formula to comply with that for New York, and they changed it nationwide, and it has pissed her off for years.
It's like the old McDonald's fries that in 1991 or whatever got rid of being fried in tallow. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure I've talked about this. I don't know if it's been on the show before, but Malcolm Gladwell, the guy who wrote the book Outliers and a couple other books. He's the guy who popularized the theory about 10,000 hours is the gateway to becoming a genius at something, which is not a good summary, but it gets the point across. He has a podcast called Revisionist History, where he talks about things in history that have been often overlooked or misunderstood. And he devotes an entire episode to French fries and how he's pissed off at McDonald's and health rights activists for making McDonald's go away from, well, fast food go away from frying in animal fat.
I have
say it tastes better.
I have started taking bacon grease and just letting it drip through a coffee filter into a little sealable bowl and keeping it in the fridge and using that as fat, and it's changed my life.
Like you've had to buy new pants, or what do you mean changed your life?
No, man, I'm cooking all kinds of new and exciting things in bacon grease.
Oh, yeah?
Anything you can fry in bacon grease, and that makes it better.
I can dig it. You know, I bet if it's bacon grease, it's going to get hard in the refrigerator. You could spread it on toast.
Come on now, don't give me no ideas.
Oh my gosh.
It is the most delightfully pure, beautiful white.
He's not talking about his wife's wedding dress, folks. No. He's talking about bacon.
Pure as the driven snow. I mean, it's just lard.
And, oh, that's funny.
It's like Crisco, but better.
Well, to get slightly back on topic, if you think I'm a complete idiot or an inflammatory left-wing derogatory term, snowflake, or if you think for some reason I'm a ridiculous snowflake, that'll be a fun conversation. Email me, craig@halfash.com. I'd love to hear about it.
Well, we have been reminded that we need to talk about these cigars, but I will think you should make your announcement more. Do you need to detail that more before we move on to that?
My announcement. I need to slide it. Oh, the sale. Yes. Hey, I have now been given full on approval to share that the sale that has been discussed often on this show, one of my buddies who has been liquidating his stock, he now has decided that he is okay if I open his sale of cigars up to any of the listeners of our show. These are not my cigars. These are not cigars that I'm working with some retailer to get rid of or anything. This is a consumer of cigars who has a new wife, has chosen to get rid of many, many, many of the cigars that he has purchased over the years and has asked me to help him do so. So if you have any interest in acquiring some aged cigars from someone who was very heavily into collecting in the mid-2000s, there are a lot of cigars available for sale from dozens and dozens of manufacturers that will be posted up at halfash.com/forum. Come on over to the forum. You need to post a few times and introduce yourself in order to have access to the trading or sales room where we're going to have this post. And anybody can purchase these cigars. They are deep discount. The least discounted cigar that you can buy from him is 25% off. He has gone 75% off for some of these cigars, and that is compared to what he paid, not what current market value is. So if he bought a box of cigars for $100 and it's an average box of cigars, he's now selling it for $50, plus the fact that it might be 8-10 years old. Or if it's a deep discount box, maybe he's selling that $100 box for $25. So anyways, halfash.com/forums. Introduce yourself. Post, half dozen times, 10 times, 5 times, whatever it may be, until you have access to the sales room, and you will see this sale. And clear him out. Make him an offer. He's at that stage. He wants to sell his cigars. So there you go.
Cool. I have gone back to that table a number of times in the past however long, year or more, and have not been disappointed with anything at all.
Well, actually, that's not true.
Okay, what am I disappointed in?
We will talk about that after the show.
Okay. Okay.
I thought there was one cigar that you were disappointed in, not due to the sale, just due to the cigar not being what you were pleased about.
Disappointed in the progression of the cigar, yeah.
I'm sorry. Yes, that's probably not the point you were trying to make. I should not have insinuated as such. I'm sorry. Okay.
What do you think about this cigar tonight? Because I'm down to like an inch of this thing left.
All right, we should have talked about this about 20 minutes ago when I was in the middle of it. It had reached kind of a cool menthol, almost minty background, not texture, sensation. It was unique on the palate. I really enjoyed it, actually. It still has some of those kind of tangy, tart qualities, but they have softened to be a little bit more in line with like cocoa, almost a cocoa powder flavor without the heavy bitterness. It has really backed off from any of the bitterness or sharpness. I really, really find it to be a terrific finish. I'm at about 2 inches left. You can check that out right there. I dig the hell out of it. It's really, really good.
Same here. I like it. It's a little sedated for me. It's maybe not quite as bold of a set of flavors as you're getting. I think instead of the menthol, it comes off a little more cedary to me than menthol. But definitely kind of see where you're going with that. Not a great deal of strength in terms of its potency. And I know it's a small cigar, but it's not. I mean, I imagine I could pick up another one right behind it and not have any issue at all.
I did. I came downstairs an hour, hour and 15 minutes before we were going to start recording and had the first of these. So I will also add that there is a little bit more evolution to the kind of baking spice, the savory baking spice that you were talking about on the first third.
Mm-hmm.
That was there a little bit for me. It wasn't overly notable, but it has grown. And in this final third, it is absolutely there. It might have just the slightest bit of sweetness, but there's almost like a black tea and I don't know, cinnamon. It's not nutmeg. It doesn't have the sharpness of nutmeg or cloves. Maybe it's like cardamom and cinnamon. I really like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that one. PGPS.
Mm-hmm.
Craig at halfash.com.
I'm having trouble still smoking it. It's getting short enough that it's starting to burn my fingers a little bit. Mm. I'm having to navigate around the mic trying to get it to my mouth. But I suppose I'll manage.
I dig this cigar. So since we are both so low here, and this is an unbanded, before we get into what else we've been smoking, do we want to open her up?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. So you have some pretty good thoughts here.
I do. I don't have the reveal, but I see you do. I am firmly convinced this is exactly what we thought it was based on its press, based on its flavor, based on everything. My whole experience, I think this is the Santos de Miami, which was made for Jameson by Luis Sanchez. The only thing that puts the little bit, just a little hint of a doubt in the back of my mind is this is not a super common, nationally everywhere available kind of brand. It's not something that would have been on every shelf in every retailer in the nation. So I'm surprised if it were to show up from your cousin. I don't know. I don't even know where he lives, but it's not something that could just show up everywhere.
So my cousin lives in northern Wisconsin.
Wow.
But he hails from Chicago. Okay. And he's more Chicago than I am. I'm 40 miles suburban Chicago. He's, a 5-minute walk away from Chicago. So he has a lot of family and friends still in the area. Regularly makes it to a couple of the Davidoff lounges in the Chicago area, Casa de Monte Cristo being one. And I would not be surprised to have seen this on the Casa de Monte Cristo shelves. Or in their vintage room, would not have surprised me at all. And go ahead.
And the other thing I was going to throw in there is that although if that's what these are, Luis owns the brand now, Jameson's been off the market for several years.
I would not be surprised if these cigars are without a doubt aged. This does not taste like it's right off the shelf or right off the truck, so to speak. It's a pretty well-balanced and, worn cigar. It feels as if it has kind of broken down a little bit, but in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
So my standpoint here was that, or guess, was that this may have been a T.L. Johnson Tempio. And if you want to talk about a cigar or a brand that has even less national recognition than Jameson, I think it might be those Tempios. But that being said, Terry and Luis Sanchez had a brief partnership. And I know that Luis did roll some of Terry's cigars with this same sort of Vitola. So that was where my mind went to, though this does not taste like a Tempio to me. I think I have had one or two of those Santos de Miami. And
I had one recently.
We did. Yep. I did have one somewhat recently. And so I don't have enough experience to go that route with that blend. But when I saw the cigar, it really made me think about Luis and Terry. So I'm going to open it up. And if I had to bet, I would put my money on your guess. So here we go.
The Tempio was a darker kind of flavor to me, a deeper, more toasty even.
All right. You, sir, hit a home run.
Woohoo!
You got it, baby.
All right. I have had a half a dozen or so of these in the past less than 2 months. Not in this size, but this line.
And he actually sent all of the bands for our cigars. All four of them, two for each of us. So, this Unbanded Santos de Miami by Jameson Cigar came from a box from 2015. Dominican Puro. Wrapper was Havana Corojo. Binder was Corojo 98. And the fillers were Corojo and Criollo, grown in the Dominican.
Corojo 98? Criollo?
He has written out binder was Corojo 98, though Criollo 98 does sound like a more common varietal.
Yeah. Cool.
You knocked it out of the park, my friend.
I had a lot of clues.
Yeah. I got to say, the Vitola really kind of gave this one away. That was a pretty obvious one.
Yeah, the edges. I mean, I've seen a lot of pressed cigars in my day. But I haven't seen very many that get pressed that sharply the way Luis does it.
Mm-hmm. Dan Crouch in the chat room. You win nothing! I don't know why that makes me chuckle, but it did. all right. Bravo, my friend. That was pretty damn awesome. Before we even started recording, you said something about it.
I would not say I win nothing. I get the prestige.
You do. We've both hit a couple home runs here on this show. We haven't done terrible.
Yeah. Every couple of years we get one right. Which, you according know, to Zedman, we only do a couple of shows a year, so that's a pretty good record.
I got to say, I'm a little ashamed that one of us didn't, just for the record, say Cabaguan Maduro. I mean, you'd think we'd have learned by now that we should just say Cabaguan Maduro.
Yeah, I think Pete has some special rollers just rolling that cigar in all kinds of shapes and sizes. Just a few.
there you go. Dan also just put in the chat room. So whose turn is it to send in another Cab Maduro? Well, I like this cigar. This was really good.
Yeah, this Vitola works. The others I have are the aforementioned disappointment, and not disappointment in anything except the fact that I think they've gone over the hill. In the other Vitola, the box that I bought in the sale, I don't know the age. I think it had age on it, but I felt like they had lost a step. I think they are past their peak or their prime. They're still enjoyable cigars. They're just not what they once were.
Yeah, I would say that the vast majority of the things from that sale are now approaching 10 years old. So this box, if it is 3.5, 4 years old, did it give a month? I think it just said 2015. No, March 2015. So just about 4 years old. That's a good age for these cigars. This cigar felt like it had rounded itself out a little bit.
Yeah, that's funny. It was such a sharp press.
Yeah. I did, no pun intended there. All right. So shall we get into what else we've been smoking?
Yeah. You want to start with the first couple chapters of yours?
Bite me. Well, my first chapter is actually just the prelude. It is a continuation of our last show for the completionists out there. Remember that cigar that I had smoked that I could not remember, and I kept saying, it'll come to me, I'll do another one.
I do remember.
Well, it was a Joya de Monterrey Añejado from 2015. Those came out in a Corona Gorda, 5 5/8 by 46. And Kip is correcting my Spanish grammar by putting the tilde over the end. Thank you, you bastard. you should sit upright. When you slouch back like that and chuckle, it makes your shirt jiggle.
Yeah, lots of me jiggles.
Yeah, so it was an Añejado.
Are you amused?
I am. I'm very amused. Your forehead is now half the height that it used to be. There we go. now you're Dilbert. So an Añejado. It was. I have to say, I've been underwhelmed by this box. It was a cigar I was really looking forward to. I have absolutely loved some of the aged Joya de Monterreys that I've had in my life. And the Añejados seems to pretty legitimately be box aged for 5 years before, at least 5 years before they left Havana. And these cigars did not seem to fare as well as what I was expecting. Still have not really blossomed out there. They're not a bad cigar. They just have really focused on some of the tangy, tart sides to the Joya, profile. It's a little unfortunate. There's so much more sweetness and nuttiness that can come from it, and it has not. So I'm hoping age continues to break down the tobacco in such a way that sweetness becomes something else as the oxidation process takes hold. But anyways, that is my first from last week, and then the first from this show is it La Roma de Cuba. So we have had these as a show cigar, and I'm sure that I have talked about them in the What Else I've Been Smoking before. So most of you will have some familiarity. These are essentially a Robusto, a little bit longer, a little bit wider, maybe a 52 by 5.5. If you want to call it a Toro, go right ahead. So we have definitely smoked them before on the show, and they still continue to evolve. If I recall correctly, when they were much lighter and almost tangy when we tasted them, I'm going to guess probably 50 or 60 shows ago. They are a far cry from their original dark and rich profile. And their intermediate evolution had left me underwhelmed. But now, 9 years after the release, the cigars are blossoming into a more complex, more harmonious combination of their initial flavors and their reviewed state. So they're really hitting their stride. Some of these have been added to the box pass that's currently going on over at halfash.com/forum. Head on over. I hope that we're going to do some additional box passes. Those are really fun. There's been a lot of bombs and fun things that have been added to those boxes as they've been passed along. Except for me. I'm not doing that because Mike Stewart refuses to meet up and exchange the box in person. So he's going to get nothing extra, the bastard.
He wins nothing.
You win nothing! this cigar, it was time. This box is going to go quickly now. They were really, really starting to be absolutely fantastic.
Yep.
Say.
Well, I got a couple of things on here. A couple of pipe tobaccos that I've opened up this week. And these are actually recent pipe tobaccos, not from my aged collection in Florida. These are some I picked up this past year. First, I have Gaslight Plug. These are both Greg P's tobaccos, and you can see this is a plug. This is actually a part of a plug. I've already cut some, but for those who are not familiar, it's kind of a little cake of tobacco, and you just take a pocket knife.
Cube of tobacco.
Yeah, it's shaped like a cube now because I've already trimmed part of it off. It would have been a little bigger. This was a 2-ounce tin, so came with two little plugs, roughly an ounce apiece. Here's a picture of the tent or some video. It's a really dark, kind of heavy on the Latakia blend, strongly influenced by the Latakia. Very smoky, very dark, very enjoyable. I really like it. This was the first time I'd had it, but if you don't know, with these little plugs, you take a pocket knife and just shave off the edges, just cut through it and rub it out into whatever consistency you want. You, of course, can't just drop a cube of pressed tobacco into a pipe and expect to light it. It's a silly thing, but I enjoy those kinds of presentations. I like the process of preparing tobacco and getting it ready beforehand rather than just dumping it into a bowl or doing the old codger thing where you just cram a pipe into a jar of tobacco and push it in there with your thumb. That's what the old timers do. If you're not over 70, you cannot do that and garner any respect whatsoever. But it's a very good tobacco. It has not harmed my fanboyhood of Greg Pease's tobacco any whatsoever. I've quite enjoyed it. Very, very smoky. Very dense smoke. If you're not a fan of Latakia, you would not like it because it is very, very noticeable in its blend. It's not a condiment. It is the base of this tobacco. And I'm trying to look at the tin. He doesn't say that, but it is. It's not like 7% Latakia. It's a significant portion. The other one is Regent's Flake, also from Greg Pease. It's a little bit different blend. It's not heavy in Latakia. In fact, I don't know if specifically there's any in there. There's Ismir, which is an Oriental varietal, but it is presented in kind of a tumbled flake. You can kind of see the pieces here are not entirely rubbed out into ribbons, so you need to do a little bit of preparation before you smoke it. Unless you're outdoors in the wind, it's not going to want to stay lit. And it is a little damp coming out of the tin. At least this one was. This was the first time I had tried this one. And so when you have a little bit of extra moisture and a blend that is heavily composed of Virginia tobaccos, it's going to bite the crap out of your tongue if you try to keep it lit while it's wet. Just let it dry out a little bit before you put it into a pipe. Also very enjoyable, but much more nuance. The flavors are more obscure. You got to really pay attention if you want to get that much out of it. Otherwise, you're going to finish a bowl and wonder what just happened. It's not bold and in your face with super strong flavors. I dig it. I dig both of them so far.
So, since you don't have a whole ton going on with your next comment, you want to talk a little bit about some of those things that
sure. you had? Yeah, I said other than that, I don't think I've smoked any, maybe and not many, and maybe even not any other cigars since our last show, with the exception of some that I get from my friend William. And these are cigars. He has some friend who works in some factory somewhere in the Dominican Republic, and I don't know if the guy just makes off with cigars or their seconds. I got no idea, but he gets these cigars and gives them to me. And so I can't really talk much about them because it's like a grab bag. You never know what you're going to get. I don't even know what this factory makes outside. Oh, I can't even say that. I don't know much about this factory. And so every time I get cigars, there's something different, which it sounds fun and exciting, but it's also a little disappointing when you get some that are really great and then you can't reproduce that. You don't know, well, I don't know what I smoked. It was kind of this big and it was dark, and that's about as much as you can guess. And so it's whatever shows up. They tend to be enjoyable, the majority of them anyway, and I've had a pretty good experience the past couple of weeks.
Well, I like doing that sort of a thing, but I really don't like doing it. It's kind of like going into your humidor and finding a cigar that's kind of lost its band, or it was never banded and you just completely forgot what it was. Mm-hmm. It's always great when you get a an awesome cigar there. But then there's just such a moment of being absolutely deflated because you're never going to repeat it.
Yeah, exactly.
That annoys the crap out of me. Well, the only other cigar that I want to talk about is completely new to me. And it happens to be from the manufacturer Principal Cigars. Never heard of them before at all.
It is Principal, A-L. It's not Principe, all right?
I believe it's Principal because okay. The guy is from, or the company is based out of Nashville.
Okay.
So I don't believe that it's Principe. In fact, I have their website open, and it is Principal. There's some weird sort of large, the last P is very large, so Principal Cigars. So I don't know why they didn't use an accent, or maybe it's just graphics, but who knows. Principal Cigars. The line is Accomplice, and the cigar was the Corojo Lancero. So 7x40, technically not a Lancero, but nobody seems to care about Vitolas like I care about Vitolas. So I'll give them a pass on that. I have to say, I don't mean for this to sound conceited, but I am rarely unprepared for a cigar to be delicate or more complex than I can handle. But this cigar bested me. I threw it out halfway through. I had not treated the cigar with the delicate hand that it needed. I abused it too much in the first inch or so. It overheated by halfway through. It lost its major complexity by an inch through, and started getting slightly acrid. And by halfway, it just was not enjoyable to smoke. I had it when I was driving, had my window open, was driving. And I'm sure overheated it or took too many puffs in too short of a period and then let it go out practically and then had to toke on it a few times. Whatever it might have been, it was not what the cigar could take. My palate was pretty fatigued pretty quickly, and the cigar was not overly heavy, overly strong, overly full-bodied. It was fantastic, and I really look forward to having more of these. It is manufactured by at the Kellner Boutique Factory in Dominican Republic by Hanky Kellner. So,
Junior,
that's correct. So it's or Heinrich Kellner Junior, I should say. It's a really beautiful cigar, rich and soft and robust. But I have in here falsely bold. It seemed like a cigar that could stand up to however you wanted to smoke it, and it just was not. It was delicious the first quarter inch, and it got worse from there because I did not respect it as much as I needed to.
Reading the comments in the chat room.
Yeah, I was too. That was pretty damn good. Anyways, if you have a chance, Principal Cigars is the name of the manufacturer. Accomplice Lancero, and it is the what is it? Accomplice Corojo Lancero, I should say. The band. You know what the band was, Kip?
I do not.
It was one of those old fabric bands like the Olivas.
Oh.
So that was definitely a differentiating factor here.
Interesting.
And in case anyone is wondering out there, I do not smoke my cigars in the truck with my head out the window like a dog. Just for clarity's sake, Zedman. You bastardo.
Are we about ready to wrap this joker up?
I think we're done. Cool. I've had a liter of club soda and three fingers of rum. I definitely am done.
So that means you need a trip to the bathroom pretty soon.
Yeah, we're going to need to close this down.
Or you're going to have to recycle that bottle.
We're going to need to close this down.
All right. Well, folks, we certainly appreciate you tuning in with us, whether you're here tonight in the chat room or somewhere down the road. If you want to come back for episode 191, we will be smoking. Who knows? We don't know yet. We have not yet picked a cigar of the week. We will do that between now and then. So it'll be a surprise, certainly for you, and maybe for us at the time. But in the meantime, if you want to get in touch with us and write any hate mail to Craig over his opinions about legislation, you can get us by email to craig@halfashed.com or kip@halfashed.com, or join us at our forum. As has been mentioned a number of times, come check out what we got going on over there. It's a fun little corner of the vast interwebs. And of course, you can always find us on any of the typical social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, yada, yada, yada. We're out there and available. We'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. And tonight's dedication goes out to the folks that are not in the chat room. I love you all. So the 7 billion, or I should say 6,999,994 people. Whatever, I screwed that up. There's a half dozen guys in the chat room. I don't like any of you. See you later, everybody. And in the wise words of our mentor, Mr. Dale Roush, good night, everybody. And thanks for listening, except you six.